Bottle by Chikyo Ryunin Yuan McGee, who was ordained by our Nomon Tim Burnett here in Bellingham in 2019. Currently, he is in Colorado and practicing with the Prairie Mountain Zen Center in Longmont and practicing with Chodo Cliff Clouson. Thank you very much, Yuan, for taking the time and effort to come to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shudo Chris. Sorry, I have to get organized here in the Zoom world. Let me just get one more item and I'll be ready. Well, good morning, everyone. Lovely to see so many familiar faces. I almost feel like I'm in Bellingham. And it's very snowy here and very cold. So I think we're all in the polar vortex together. And everyone, can people hear me okay? Okay, thank you. It's a little hard to tell. Well, again, thank you to Shudo Chris and also Nomon Tim for inviting me today. I know you have been studying and reflecting on Dogen's Rendo-wa, written by Dogen when he was living alone in dark, rainy Fukakusa a few years after returning from his pilgrimage to China. And thus it would seem ideal to talk about Jujuyu Zanmai or enlightenment or awakening. But Norman and Tim have both touched on these central topics. So I want to back up and speak today about experiences that frequently precede our entry to practice and also characterize our experience within practice. These are hallmarks of the practice journey that all practitioners must meet deeply and intimately inside their own body, heart, mind. So I want to speak about isolation and vulnerability and suffering and courage. Okamura Roshi, in his introduction to The Wholehearted Way, explains that at the time Dogen did not have his own monastery, so not many people could visit him in Fukakusa to ask about the Dharma. He wanted to leave what he had learned from his teacher in China for sincere practitioners who were looking for the true Dharma. He was isolated and alone there, looking for ways to articulate the foundations of practice in order to share it with others. Also in the introduction, Okamura reflects on a similar moment in his own life. He writes, "I had left Pioneer Valley Zendo in Massachusetts because of physical problems. My belongings were all in one backpack. I was completely broke. I had no job, no place to live or practice. I was alone. I lived and sat by myself, except during 5-day sessions once a month. Since I was in such a similar situation, and I was 32 years old, same age as Dogen Zenji, when he wrote Rendo-wa, I felt that I really understood him." So writes Shohaku Okamura Roshi. But Dogen himself states in his introduction that he is writing for, quote, sincere practitioners who on their own do not seek after fame and profit and who give priority to the mind that seeks the way. Deep down in both Dogen and Okamura Roshi sits a profound sincerity, one that brings them to practice the way and that compels them to sustain their practice through the many challenging circumstances of this life. In preparing this talk, I wanted to back up and examine some of these elemental and existential experiences that arise prior to practice, prior to what Dogen is opening with in Bendowa. The text centers on Dogen's efforts to establish the fundamental essence of the true Dharma way that he encountered and absorbed on his pilgrimage in China, particularly the meeting with his teacher Rujing and his awakening on Mount Jintong. However, I was brought to reflect on the profound losses that Dogen and others have experienced intimately in their lives. I reflected on the vulnerability and courage that motivate and sustain the journey of spiritual practice. Dogen himself lost his father, age 2, then watched the smoke of his mother's ashes rise from her cremation when he was 8. He was deeply touched by loss and suffering, by his mother's own practice and her wish for him to ordain. And these combined to nudge him in that direction. Similarly, Okamura Roshi tells the story of Sumedha in the beginning of his book, Living by Vow. Like Dogen, Sumedha lost his parents when he was very young. Then he was taken by a palace attendant to bear witness to the incredible fortune his family had amassed. He writes, "After gathering all this wealth, none of my parents and ancestors were able to take even a penny with them when they passed. Can it be right that I should seek to take my wealth with me when I go?" Then he told the king that he would give up all this wealth to the poor and become a spiritual practitioner, leaving home on the way. Okamura concludes the story by revealing how, through Sumedha's sincere and embodied efforts to practice the wholehearted way, we too do our full prostrations, the bows that enable and empower the spread of practice through Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, no matter how deep the mud or how profuse the rain. In the modern West, our world can seem very far from medieval Japan or ancient India. Many of us were raised in increasingly secularized Western culture or saturated with Judeo-Christian teachings that may have left us skeptical regarding our religious and spiritual inheritance. In that sense, we may at times feel highly dissimilar to Dogen's sincere practitioners and see ourselves possibly in overt rebellion towards anything religious or spiritual. The experience of modernity not only accelerates change, but also a widening and bewildering array of possibilities and paths. Thus, in the social and cultural realm, we experience this different kind of vulnerability, this distance from a sense of practice or accessibility to the Dharma, though we may also experience profound loss and suffering like young Dogen or Sumedha. We may also suffer additional confusions, incoherence, and instability. Throughout modern Western societies, not only might traditional religious cultures and practices feel insufficient to meet our needs, we may also be exposed to other traumas, domestic abuse, addiction, achievement obsession. Ensnared and entangled, we may not see ourselves as practitioners of any sort at all, to the extent that we may never have thought of using the word. In our opening the Dharma talk chant, we recite an unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. These opening two lines emphasize the rarity of exposure to the Dharma, to the wholesome opportunity to encounter the teachings. The third and fourth line, having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. This articulates the difficulty we may have in opening our ears and our minds and our hearts when the Dharma arises in our region or in our consciousness. I personally recall how frequently I saw Peace is Every Step, Thich Nhat Hanh's book, on bookshelves in Seattle houses and apartments throughout my younger years. It seemed like a requisite talisman necessary to have a proper bookshelf in Seattle society at the end of the 20th century. The central idea expressed in the title seems like a fundamental principle of a progressive life, one brought into being by a Vietnamese monk who manifested somehow that teaching in the midst of the war that tore his country to shreds. And yet few people seem to have actually read it, studied it, or absorbed it, or appeared to be practicing its principles in their everyday life and speech and conduct. So we can understand that the scarcity of beneficial spiritual practice can manifest through cultural aridity or personal, familial, and social catastrophe. We may inhabit a cultural desert, or we may inhabit a personal condition replete with disaster, anger, and repression. In other words, our conditions of woundedness and vulnerability may manifest on multiple fronts, overlapping and enhancing each other and deepening our predicament. In 2020, for instance, not only did the world plunge into pandemic, isolating millions and millions of people in psychologically challenging ways, there are also more than 270 million migrants worldwide, many displaced by war, political, cultural, and religious conflict, and global climate change. Millions more will be wandering throughout this 21st century in ways unimaginable before. In other words, many millions of people are in situations so dire and difficult that they must concentrate on basic survival long before they might turn to the inner work of spiritual healing and transformation. So we can appreciate more fully then the challenges that arise to hearing the Dharma. We can appreciate the scarcity of conditions conducive to receiving and utilizing it, both in our individual personal lives and in the lives of millions of other human beings, now and throughout all space and time. And we can appreciate more fully our vulnerability and the vulnerability of those around us. This pandemic year, we can appreciate how vulnerable is personal and public health. We in the West have largely forgotten how vulnerable we are to infectious disease. Protected by advanced medical technologies and safe vaccines for decades since the eradication of polio in the 1950s. In that sense, we may have been living in a kind of bubble, diminishing our sense of vulnerability, enhancing our sense of individual and cultural empowerment, and diminishing our humility. The COVID-19 pandemic has also revealed an additional human vulnerability. Our tendency to go quiet in the face of personal or buried trauma. Silence is deeply valued in Zen practice, yet it can be difficult to encounter when we first engage spiritual practice. We may shudder to see the deeply buried past arising again as we sit. So we can try to repress these wounds, either minimizing our Zazen practice or keeping quiet about what's really arising when we meet the teacher in Dokusan. In fact, silence can be one of the directions of escape many people take when deeply wounded and traumatized. A person can deeply fear bringing up the buried wounds of the past or struggle with the stigma of revealing deeply intimate experiences, whether with a spiritual teacher or with a counselor or therapist. There can arise a fearsome sense of a steep and slippery slope, whereon we might lose all control, plunging towards greater catastrophe and damage and suffering just by bringing it to light of day. We might fear to meet the fear that arises. Years ago, I read a brief article in the Sunday paper. It happened on a dull and private morning when I found myself piddling away unstructured time. I was surprised to be following a short piece in the travel adventure section. The narrator had managed to visit the central eastern part of France on a ski vacation in the Alps above Grenoble, perhaps near Abbeville, where the Olympic Games were scheduled. The writer was no Jean-Claude Killy or Alberto Tomba, and on his first day discovered how vast, wild, and unregulated European ski areas can be, particularly in contrast to the strictly controlled ones here in the United States. In the Alps, there were immense snow-covered glaciers, giant icy seracs that threatened to topple, yawning crevasses and remote backcountry valleys, so far from ski lifts that one could easily lose the way home. Entering one of these distant valleys from the mountain ridges high above, the rider saw a steeply falling chute of snow covered in giant bumpy moguls and an unclear exit point with the base area nowhere to be seen. Snow was falling heavily, the sunlight diminishing rapidly. The rider knew he had to risk descent in order to find his way home. Fear gripped him, as steep slopes and giant bumps were not his strength, nor was recovery of lost confidence in the face of wipeouts and loss of skis and loss of control. Just at that moment, he saw, sketched into the snow by an earlier skier, the faint yet still visible letters COURAGE. Spelling out the French word, courage. It had been, no doubt, traced by a ski pole before the person vanished down the mountain. The traces of courage are what our ancestors leave for us. Though we may never see them in person, they know the dark, steep, vulnerable slopes that we descend. They know the depths that we fear to tread, the sense of out of controlness that we may face. Our ancestors have been there, our Dharma sisters and Dharma brothers. They leave their traces for us to discover in order that we may find our way home to practice. It is when we most need some trace of support that their presence appears to hearten and send us on our way. We know that they navigated the treacherous terrain and found their way home at last, awakening to one bright moment in the snow and wind of winter. But it is not only new practitioners who need traces of courage. It is also longtime practitioners, even teachers themselves. For true spiritual practice does not only require opening at the start, it requires opening as we go along, navigating the sudden treacherous gulfs that gape when old age, suffering, and death appear. Other times, the steep, slippery slopes of greed, anger, and delusion arise. New forms of desire, hatred, and ignorance we didn't think would come or want to face. Midway through this life, I found myself lost and wandering in a dark wood, a true way no longer to be found. So Dante wrote to begin the epic journey of the soul. Even today, the dark wood endures as metaphor because of its capacity to express our lack of seeing, our blindness, our ignorance, our entanglement, and our fear. We need traces of upright practice to appear again in order to help our consciousness return to the path. Even Gautama Buddha came to find himself abandoned and alone, starving at the extreme edge of his journey through asceticism, before a young girl arrived and offered warm rice porridge to restore him. She is one of the deep ancestors, one whose warm human presence brings traces of the way, gestures of clarity, wisdom, and compassion. Returning to health, having tried both deep philosophical study and the ascetic way, Gautama recalled sitting upright under a tree as a youth, watching his father in the fields. His mind felt fresh and clear, his consciousness bright and at ease. This trace illuminated his consciousness and pointed his path to the discovery of the way of practice enlightenment. We too need to listen carefully to traces of awakened consciousness in the midst of our suffering and vulnerability. They are moments that help return us to and provide resilience on the wholehearted practice of the way. We must remember to support all beings, even our teachers, for our practice always returns us to intimacy with human vulnerability, full exposure to wild, steep, and slippery slopes. Manifesting our courage, we gently offer traces of practice enlightenment with our body, speech, heart, mind. Practicing this upright, unsurpassable, unfabricated, wondrous method together in the 10 directions. Awakening together moment by moment, Buddha to Buddha. Thank you.